positions, okay, just about. Okay, I'll call the next case, case number 61977, MJ Mirage, petitioner versus District Court, Perini being real party in interest. Again, for the record, Chief Justice Pickering and Justice Peregrine have accused from participation in this case. We will proceed with the member court. Mr. Ferrari, you may proceed.
Mr. Chief Justice, members of the court, Mark Ferrario from the law firm of Greenberg Trotter, appearing on behalf of City Center. In light of the notice that we got, I think earlier today, that you are expanding the time for argument by 5 minutes, I'm going to anticipate you're going to have some questions. And in response to something that I think Justice Cherry said, I encourage you to be blunt. This is a unique issue that faces you. I don't think you will be acting in place of the Discovery Commissioner in addressing this issue because of the unique posture of this case. You have before you a challenge to a ruling of the District Court, where the District Court, from our perspective, took the unprecedented step of precluding our expert, a structural engineer with 40 years of experience, whose experience, by the way, went unchallenged during the hearings, from proffering his opinion regarding the extrapolation of defects.
Mr. Ferrario,
yes.
I was wondering if you and opposing counsel could assist the court. I know you all don't agree on much, but maybe you could agree on this much. What is the current scope and status of the court's order?
I'll be happy to address that, Justice.
My understanding is that paragraphs 2 through 5 of the October 29, 2012 order have been deleted, but the other paragraphs remain.
That's correct.
Is that what we're operating with?
Yes. The ruling precluding extrapolation is still in place.
Can I ask the Chief if he could get confirmation from opposing counsel on that same issue?
Mr. O'Neill, I do agree with that.
The extrapolation order is still in place, yes.
Okay. No. No. Hear my question. Do you agree that the order that is the subject of this writ is the October 29, 2012 order with the deletion of paragraphs 2 through 5?
I believe that the subject of this writ is both the August 23rd order regarding extrapolation, which was then amended, and I can't remember the date of that, as well as one remaining condition on the October 29th order, and that is solely the reimbursement for the fees and costs that the real parties in interest are going to incur, the duplication of the fees and costs that we're going to incur as a result of the base or destructive testing.
So if we can hear that the August 23rd order is also the issue.
What about the scope of the October 29th order?
Is also partially issue.
So paragraphs 2 through 5 are out, and paragraphs 1 and 6, 7, and 8 are in.
That's my answer.
Yes.
Okay. Mr. Farr, you agree with that?
Yes. Hallelujah.
Okay. No, we got that disagreed to today. Okay, now we'll start the clock back up. Mr. Farr, you may proceed.
In light of that, I would also like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, if I may. So, what you have in front of you now, after all the briefing and putting the case back together, is the judge's ruling precluding extrapolation, and then the follow-on ruling, the sanction as we characterize it.
Mr. Farrello, wasn't the ruling as to extrapolation more addressed to the extrapolation as configured in this particular case, not all extrapolation?
We don't read it that way. The way we read it...
Because they were talking about statistical basis and so on, which was not proffered, a randomness of testing and so on. That's what was interplaying that order, but...
Well, if you look at the judge's order, you know, Judge Gonzalez spent a lot of time dealing with this issue, and I think it was probably characterized in the briefs that in many respects she may have done us a favor by previewing this and not having this issue happen, come up, you know, a week or two before trial. But if you look at paragraph 49, 51, and 52 of her findings of fact, she speaks of the requirement for a blind draw, randomness, and statistically valid and reliable representative samples. What Judge Gonzalez did there, as we characterize in our brief, is she made random sampling an absolute requirement as a predicate to extrapolation. And if you look at the hearing transcripts and what she referred to, she referred to cases from this court where that simply is not present. It's not dictated by this court that you have to have that type of sampling in order to extrapolate. But more importantly, and this was an issue that was, I thought, very well brought out in the Nevada Justice Association's brief, what Judge Gonzalez really did here was she substituted her judgment for the engineering judgment and the statistical judgment of City Center's experts. If you look at the testimony from Dr. Hart and from Dr. Duncan on the randomness question, and when you look at randomness, what you're trying to prevent is stacking the deck. Their testimony, when taken in context, and not the snippets that you'll see in the briefs from the responding parties, when you look at that testimony, there is no question that the selection of the sites was done without any pre-existing knowledge of defects. And therefore, it was random. The other thing that you will find when you look at the testimony, when you look at it in its entirety, is that the distribution of defects throughout the building was in fact random, as Dr. Hart said. So what you had is you had testimony from experts whose qualifications were never challenged, who testified that they'd been dealing with this way for a number of years, and Judge Gonzalez simply disregarded that. And what you had is the classic case when you took the contractor's experts and our experts, you had the classic battle of experts, and that battle should have been decided in front of a jury. And I think the decision you rendered in Higgs really mandates that. Because while the respondents can crack wise in the brief about the methodology employed by Dr. Hart, his methodology was in fact testable. And that was something you articulated in the Higgs case, where you were dealing with a rather unique expert and a challenge to that expert's opinion. What the contractors should have done is they should have gone out and tested Dr. Hart's theories. They should have done their own investigation. They didn't do that. What happened was Judge Gonzalez intervened and took it from the jury, took that decision from the jury. That should have been an issue to be decided by the jury. And that is really the main problem with her order. So when you step back and you look at not the snippets of the record or the characterization of the record, but you look at the record itself, Dr. Hart testifies he's been doing this for 40 years. There is no dispute he has tremendous qualifications in this area. And after conducting his investigation, he makes a conclusion and then extrapolates that conclusion throughout the building. The other interesting thing about this, when you look at the actual testimony, this is something that has really, I guess, perplexed me since I've gotten in the case. Their expert, Perini's own expert, looking at the same data as Dr. Hart, does the same thing Dr. Hart does. He makes assumptions regarding the rest of the building. When he signed his affidavit saying he would be the engineer of record and that the building could be repaired to a code-compliant structure, he made those conclusions, which are essentially the opposite of Dr. Hart, from the same data set. The other thing that may not have jumped out at you when you were reading the record here, and it goes to the challenge by the contractors of the data Dr. Hart used. You'll see there when we talk about the 400 sites that he used in reaching his opinion, the 400 test sites, 300 of those, and I may be off by one or two, but 400 to 300, were selected by Peruni in the engineer of record during the time that the problems were manifesting themselves out at the site. 300 of those were selected by the contractors. How Dr. Hart could be faulted for relying on those 300 sites selected by the contractors is baffling to me. But yet, that's what happened. So what really happened in the lower court? You had an engineer brought in by City Center who looked at a structure and was from a public safety standpoint, from a safety standpoint. That engineer used his engineering judgment, something that the contractors ridiculed throughout their pleadings. And he said, I'm going to apply my 40 years of experience. I'm going to take the data that was generated by the contractor and the project engineer, and I'm going to evaluate this structure. And I'm going to focus first on the most significant and critical elements in this structure. I don't think that anyone would fault Dr. Hart for doing that, other than the contractors, who want to turn this into some theoretical game as opposed to finding out what's really going on at that building, as Dr. Hart did.
Mr. Ferrari, as you go down that road, then what is the function of the court as the gatekeeper, as the expert coming in? The court has some functionality, if we look at Higgs, before we get into a battle or the testing of expert testimony. So what should the court have looked at?
I think the court should look at the qualifications. That's undeniably something the judge should do. And in this case, it's not disputed that the qualifications of Dr. Hart were unchallenged. Should look at the methodology employed, and as this court articulated in Higgs, is that methodology tested or testable? It was here. I think when you get past those two things and you look at the opinions that are being rendered, do they relate to the case at hand? Do they meet the requirements of NRS 50.275, I believe? Are they going to assist the jury? Those are all easily answered here. But what the court shouldn't do as a gatekeeper is disregard the testimony from the experts once they've established their qualifications, once they've set out their method, once that method is determined to be testable, and once you determine that the testimony they'll offer will be assistance to the jury.
What's our standard of review? Is it abuse of discretion level in this particular situation?
I think in this case, I think you're looking first at an issue of first impression here in the state, in the sense that Judge Gonzalez, we believe, did impose an absolute requirement of randomness, and I think that's an issue of law, quite frankly, and I think you can look at that de novo. Beyond that, in this context, it would be an abuse of discretion standard, Justice Cherry, and we think because she imposed this, as we characterize it, as a bright line test or an absolute test, we think she abused her discretion in that regard, and also we think she abused her discretion in regard to taking this from the jury and essentially just disregarding the testimony of our two experts.
Well, she said that as the gatekeeper, the assurances of randomness in the sample selections was deficient and prevented statistically extrapolated data to be presented to the jury. What findings are not supported by the record of randomness?
That finding itself is not supported by the record, and I'll tell you why. Okay? Dr. Hart went out there, and I think the testimony is clear, and he selected his sites with any preconceived idea of whether there would be a defect there. And as he went through the sites that he selected, approximately 100, and utilizing the data that was previously generated. And in regard to that data, Mr. Martinovich, who was the project engineer who participated in the selection of those sites with Perini, stated the same thing, that we went out, we selected those sites, we didn't know if we were going to find a defect or not. Okay? So on that point, okay, which ties into what Dr. Duncan said, you're not supposed to select a site with a preconceived idea of a defect. The testimony from our two experts is abundantly clear. They didn't do that. Judge Gonzalez simply disregarded that testimony. And then on the randomness of the defects, she did the same thing. She disregarded the testimony of Dr. Duncan. She disregarded the testimony of Dr. Hart. And concluded, after disregarding the testimony, what she concluded in finding fact 49, Dr. Hart's use of engineering judgment to select specific sample locations does not form the basis for a blind law. That's a misconstruing what Dr. Hart did. Dr. Hart went out there and he looked at locations that he felt, in his engineering judgment, were the most significant locations to test in that building. That's what you want an expert to do. Which brings me to a very important point here, and why courts should not substitute their judgment for the judgment of qualified engineers. Dr. Hart went to that building, assessed the structure, and said, I'm going to test in the areas that are most significant. How can he ever be criticized for doing that? To state that proposition is to show its absurdity, which is exactly what the contractors have done here.
In finding 50, she goes on to say in phases 1, 2, and 3, testing locations chosen by Dr. Hart were not chosen in a manner consistent with the requirements to which Mr. Duncan testified.
And if you look at Mr. Duncan's testimony, his own testimony refutes that finding. That's our statistician. He said that he evaluated what Dr. Hart did, and in fact he was questioned during the hearing about whether he observed Dr. Hart testifying on the stand and whether Dr. Hart's testimony was in fact consistent with the requirements that he had set forth to determine if there was a random sample. His answer to that was unequivocally, yes. That's the problem with the judge's ruling here. She had in her mind some idea of a random sample that is, as yet, unarticulated from my perspective, which gets me back to the problem with her order and the problem with the court system, and we've cited you cases on this, coming in and playing the role of structural engineer, statistician. This was something, again, I thought the Nevada Justice Association did a good job in their amicus brief. They talk about those types of cases and the violence that can be done where judges go beyond the role of jurist and assume the role of structural engineer or statistician. And that's in effect what happened here. And I think the ruling of the trial court judge was premised upon, I think, a misreading of the Beezer and the D.R. Horton cases. Neither of those cases mandate any randomness threshold. And that dialogue comes out through the hearing. So when you step back from this, this is what you're left with. I think I've just hit my reserve time.
Okay.
Do you have any questions?
Okay, you reserve the balance of your time, Mr. Ferrario.
Thank you.
Mr. Ogilvie, have counsel agreed to divide this time up? Or?
Yeah, I will explain that.
Okay, you may proceed on behalf of the real party in interest, Corrine.
Before I start, I'd like to clarify my response to Justice Hardesty's question. And the question was, what is the scope and status of Judge Gonzalez's October 29th order? My response was, what is the scope and status that is before this court? Because City Center hasn't challenged the other remaining conditions. The only condition that remains of Judge Gonzalez's October 29th order that City Center is contesting at this time is the reimbursement of the real parties in interest fees and costs relative to the duplicative testing. And I think opposing counsel would agree with that.
Well, the reason I ask my questions, I don't need their reply to say that. The reply they filed just a few days ago, and that reply suggests to me that they're seeking guidance on the issues associated with the extrapolation ruling, because they're concerned about its application even in the combined trial. So I wanted clarification of what specific provisions in the order are at issue. And so...
are at issue and have been properly presented to this court.
And I would submit that my response to Justice Hardesty was to that question, and it is simply the condition of reimbursement of fees and costs.
That's correct. That's all that's remaining is the fees and costs portion of, let's call it the sanction part of the order, the only thing remaining.
Paragraph 8.
The fees and costs.
Paragraph 8.
Paragraph
8. Yes. With that, good afternoon, Justices. May it please the Court. As you know, my name is George Rigoby. Mr. Silvestri and I represent Real Party in Interest, Tudor Perini Building Corp., which was the contractor of Project City Center. I have discussed the amount of time that we have with the other Real Parties in Interest. Real Parties in Interest, Seco Concrete Construction, Pacific Coast Steel, and Century Steel have all ceded their time to me. Real Party in Interest, Converse Consultants, who was represented by Mr. Scott Burris, will be utilizing all but the 15 minutes that I intend to utilize on behalf of Perini, Seco, PCS, and Century Steel. With that, I think it's important, because I don't believe that opposing counsel understands this, I think it's important for the court to understand the two different issues relative to the destructive testing. Yes, I agree 100% with Mr. Ferrario's statements that you would want a structural engineer to go in and to determine if a building is safe by examining the critical elements. That's what Dr. Hart did. We concede that. That is the whole point of City Center's argument, that Dr. Hart went in to make a determination as to whether or not the critical elements of that building were structurally viable, such that the building would be safe, and that such that the building could be repaired. That is an entirely different purpose than what is before the court today. What is before the court today is something that was a post hoc determination by a statistician using the results of the destructive testing that was unrelated to any extrapolation methodology. It was unintended to be utilized as an extrapolation methodology.
Dr. Overby, as a result of counsel's comments a moment ago, reduced to its simplest terms, what is now before the court is an interlocutory review of a sanction order in a discovery dispute.
That would be...
what precedent is there for this court to grant a writ to such a case?
Tudor Perini submits that there is none. That this is simply a discovery issue. That the district court simply issued an order consistent with this court's prior decisions relative to the admissibility of some expert testimony. The district court, with respect to the extrapolation order, which Tudor Perini submits is now moot, did not impose her judgment over any of the judgments of the structural engineer. But in fact, again, Tudor Perini submits that that extrapolation order is moot, and here's why. That there's two misnomers in this case. One is the term additional testing. City Center has asked to do is perform not additional testing, but retesting. The retesting that City Center recently completed was a complete do-over. The results of that testing are intended by City Center to completely replace the results of the prior testing. Therefore, with the results that City Center has now gained, and in City Center's reply that was submitted yesterday, the court was informed that phase four destructive testing has now been completed. With the completion of that phase four destructive testing, there is a complete new set of results. Therefore, the court's finding relative to the extrapolation order, evidentiary hearing that took place last year, is completely moot. City Center is no longer even affected by the court's extrapolation order. The City Center has an entire new set of testing results as a result of this phase four destructive testing. And we don't even have to talk about Judge Gonzalez superseding or replacing her judgment over a structural engineer.
If they were to attempt to use the same extrapolation method with the new information, would they be precluded?
Same extrapolation methodology?
Well, based on the order of the court.
I would submit that probably they are. Not because of the court's order, but because of the law that this court has imposed pursuant to D.R. Horton, and that is whether or not a valid and representative sample has been used to extrapolate with.
In light of the court's vacating paragraphs 2 through 5, we don't know what the judge is going to do with respect to the admission of Dr. Hart's testimony, do we, at this stage?
Not until there has been another hearing relative to this new round of destructive testing. That is absolutely correct.
So we're in the throes of discovery?
We are in the throes of discovery, yes.
Which again reduces now, apparently, this dispute to one of our reviewing the reasonableness of the interlocutory sanction in a discovery dispute.
Well, I would agree with everything Justice Hartenstein said except for the term sanction. I don't see this in any way to be a sanction. What it is, as the district court stated expressly several times, an attempt to ameliorate the prejudice that is inuring to the real parties in the interest. As a result of City Center completely fouling up the original phases of destructive testing and then requesting an additional round of retesting, which, by the way, the district court had no obligation to grant. The district court could have indicated, no, you've had your opportunity, and we're moving forward, which is what would transpire in 99% of the cases, because in 99% of the cases, this issue doesn't even arise until a couple of weeks before trial. It was at the court's, as a result of the district court's looking out for the best interests of City Center, that the district court suggested to City Center that we engage in this evidentiary hearing long before the trial, so that the district court didn't allow the Harmon to be demolished, and then make a ruling that, in fact, this extrapolation methodology.
And for the record, paragraph 1 of the order, which suspends the prior order requiring demolition of the building, or allowing demolition of the building, is still in effect. That's not before us.
That is correct. So, I would submit that rather than, going back to your question, rather than this being a sanction, this was a
reasonable point of view. If it's a sanction, from your point of view, it's a mitigation against costs. But at the end of the day,
depending upon the verdicts in this case, it's certainly something that can be reviewed on appeal.
Yes, that is correct. The status of it is there is a special master that is to review the fees and costs incurred and submitted by the real parties in interest. That special master will submit a recommendation to the court. The court will issue an order, and as you stated, that is all available, and it's all we're talking about is money that would be combined into whatever determination this court ultimately decided on appeal. I want to talk about actually, unless the court has any other questions, I'll submit.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Ogilvie. Mr. Burse.
Good afternoon. May it please the court. Scott Burse and Mike Edwards for Converse Consultants, which has an independent and perhaps narrow perspective because Converse is here as a regulated design professional by NRS 625.050. It performs, quote, responsible supervision of construction, end quote, which constitutes the practice of professional engineering. We are not contractors. Thus, Converse has traveled a different path from Perini and the subs. However, we have arrived at similar conclusions and will attempt to provide just two examples showing why this extrapolation is unreliable, as the lower court found in paragraph 51 of its August 23rd order. And if there is any doubt, we submit that this court consider retaining its own unbiased statistician.
Why should we reach that issue if it's been vacated?
If what's been vacated?
If the issue of extrapolation has been vacated.
I don't know that it has been, but we were going to address just the substance of why the lower court's order was correct. To get a quick overview, for our first example, we explained that City Center improperly counted looping repair locations as data. That was pre-phase, what they call pre-phase one data. But then to make it worse, they actually cherry-picked or stacked the deck with only 184 of those locations. In our second example, Dr. Hart had only chipped a small part of a single column on the 25th floor, arguably requiring no repair, but they want to extrapolate to get damages to repair every single column on that floor and every column on each floor below that to level 21 without proving that any one of those columns needs any repair. We point out first that most of City Center's data points for chipping at the Harmon did not come from their own testing. It came from the early repair locations during construction, looking first only at the loop beam data. Hundreds of locations were actually repaired before this case began, which they refer to euphemistically as, quote, pre-phase one sampling locations for the loop beams. But those repair locations were never fit for extrapolation. City Center's experts first counted 285 candidate loop beam repair locations, but then added another layer of incurable bias by cherry-picking only 184 of those points as their set of loop beam data. And we asked their expert on day four of the extrapolation hearing, question, can you explain why there was a systematic exclusion of 100 other potential loop beam locations? And his answer was, quote, that's all I feel comfortable with. But reliable extrapolation requires a protocol for such systematic exclusion of data. Note that City Center's experts chipped zero looping locations, that they improperly counted 184 of those previous looping repairs, counting them improperly first as defects and second as somehow data for extrapolation. But they cannot honestly do either one. They eventually even dropped three more of the locations for their final count of 181 loop beam data points. But none of them should have been counted or even considered as statistically valid or reliable data for extrapolation. Yet they present the loop beam data first because that's their biggest set. However, for many reasons, the lower court had no real choice but to find that the pre-phase one sampling locations did not provide adequate assurances of randomness. And that's more than half of all of their chipping locations. One more quick example from Perini's cross-examination of Dr. Hart on July 24, 2012. Dr. Hart had chipped part of a single column on the 25th floor, which was the last floor constructed. Level 25 was constructed long after the stop construction on level 20 to 21 at the Harmon. So by level 25, there was an extreme or heightened oversight of the construction by City Center itself, by Clark County, Congress, Marini, Halco, who had all essentially tripled their forces for the construction oversight of levels 21 to 25, including that particular column that Dr. Hart partially chipped on the 25th floor for this case. And as expected, he didn't find much. Nothing requiring repair, but arguably nominal defects, that the concrete might be an eighth of an inch out of tolerance, that the rebar was uneven, but he testified was within tolerance.
Counselor, you've gone through this, but it seemed that our dispute is primarily as to what was found on floors 20 and below. Above 20, the parties seemed to agree that changes were made and so on, so they wouldn't look as closely at those particular floors because they thought corrections had been made. Is that a theory?
Your Honor, Dr. Hart testified that he wants to tell the jury that he needs to repair every column on level 25, 24, 23, 22, even though he's only partially tested one, and even though he testified he knows that those levels were constructed with the heightened level of oversight. In the end, we submit that the problem with the RIF relief is not ripeness versus mootness. The problem is the absence of error by the lower court, because the extrapolation arguments in this case have drifted far out of bounds of what would be reliable data. If there are no further questions, I'll...
Questions? Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Bruce. Mr. Farley, I'm going to...
today, and Mr. Ogilvie and I would be able to agree on something, but it doesn't appear that's going to happen. Based upon our reading of what the court has done, I don't think it's fair to say that the ruling on extrapolation is not still in play, and I'll tell you why. The sanctions that have been imposed on Saints have flowed from that ruling, and she's also prevented us from de-designating or withdrawing our expert report. Our expert report extrapolates. She's already said we can't extrapolate. So no matter how you cut it, her extrapolation ruling is still in play in this case. But I'm going to tell you another reason why we need this court's intervention at this time. We have a rather unique situation at the Harmon right now. City Center, based upon input it had from its experts, I started this process, I think, over 16 months ago with a request to demolish the Harmon because of concerns about public safety. In light of the phase four testing that has been undertaken, we now have a coalescence of opinion of the experts on the need to address that building from a public safety standpoint. And we submitted that letter to the court in our supplement. Perini's own expert, albeit supposedly acting on his own, has rendered an opinion that as a result of the phase four testing, the building now is unsafe and cannot be repaired to be a code-compliant structure. We brought this to the court's attention early this year when we asked for expedited consideration of this writ. We think that the issues presented
in terms of how the court, and Mr. Enderby really conceded this in his argument while saying it wasn't in play, what did he tell you? That the judge applied the standards set forth by this court in prior case law. That's precisely the issue we brought for you, before you. That is not what you said in your prior cases. So stepping back and looking at this case, and looking at the ruling from the court below, and looking at your pronouncements on when writ relief is appropriate, I submit to you this is the poster child for writ relief because of the public safety overlay we have out there with regard to the harm. Now there is no dispute between experts that something needs to be done with that building. And then we need to have guidance from this court as to what evidentiary standards are going to apply in evaluating our experts' testimony before we take that building down. And that's why this is important, and that's why we need this decision sooner rather than later.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you to all counsel. I appreciate your excellent arguments and briefs, and the matter will stand submitted. The court will be recessed to the next call.